I'm Floyd Hall, and this is a Wonder Root artist feature presented in conjunction with the Spelman College Museum of Fine Art. And today I have the pleasure of speaking with Renee Masai, curator and head of archive for Autograph APB in London, who is also the curator of the Black Chronicles 2 exhibition on display at Spelman's Museum currently. Renee, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you. It's a pleasure to be here. Very good to meet you, Floyd.
I'm very happy to have some time with you today. Let's talk about Black Chronicles 2. Tell me about Black Chronicles 1.
Black Chronicles 1 was the kind of official start of our Black Chronicles series. It was an exhibition, a small showcase that happened back in London in 2011 in partnership with Magnum Photos. And Magnum invited us, myself and Mark Seeley, the director of Autograph ABP and co-curator of the exhibition, to have a look at their archive and start to imagine what could be excavated as part of this series to look at the kind of presence of Black figures within the archival vaults of their collection. And it has since grown into a series of exhibitions where we partner with different institutions and individuals to present and disseminate images that are not usually seen in the public realm, ideally images that haven't been published or researched or unearthed before, and that could happen in the form of a showcase, a publication, or a symposia series under this umbrella of Black Chronicles and the Missing Chapter.
Black Chronicles 2, tell me about the images that are going to be on display, but more so the time period around those images.
Okay, well, the first thing to say about the exhibition is that it really deals with Victorian Britain. So we're talking 1850s to the late 1800s. And most of the photographs were taken in the latter half of the 19th century. And a few of them, the earliest image, I believe, is from the 1862. Now, the key thing about this exhibition is that when we look at the history of migration in Britain, usually, traditionally, historically, that conversation always begins with a kind of post-war moment. So very rarely do we speak about Victorian Britain in relation to Black migration or images of Black people. So one of the underlying desires with this project, if you like, was to gently, or maybe radically, disrupt this notion of Black migration and representation to begin in the 20th century with what we often refer to as the Windrush moment. And the Windrush moment really refers to the arrival of a very large cruise ship from the Caribbean in 1948, which brought on board 460-something Jamaican migrants who came to live and work in Britain. And this is the historical moment that's usually cited as the kind of beginning of mass migration to the UK. But of course, Black people have been in Britain for centuries and centuries, tracing this Black presence all the way back to the Roman Empire. But what we didn't have up until now were images to prove that. So very, very few photographs existed. So what we tried to do with this particular research program, which is really rooted in a kind of curatorial archive excavation mission, was to expand the history of photography and the history of representation all the way back to the very earliest images taken of Black people in the UK. And photography, as you may know, was invented in 1839. So the hope and the desire is to find the earliest images of Black people taken in Britain.
So tell me more about Black people in Britain at this time, because I think from an American perspective, it seems on the surface that there is a very stark difference in experience when mm-hmm. it comes to Black people in America at that time. Mm-hmm. Slavery had not been abolished in America. So there's a big range of experiences of being Black in America at that time. So contrast that with what was the experience or the state of conditions around Black people in Britain at that time.
Okay. Well, historically, as you say, the experience is a very different one, but the constituency of black people in Britain is equally as diverse. So you would find people who were former slaves. You would find people who came to work in Britain. You would have visitors and performers, but you'd also have dignitaries from the African continent who would come and visit Queen Victoria. And then you would have a whole range of black British-born subjects. Often, unfortunately, we do not have names for those people, because if they say we're ordinary citizens, and the register, so the national census at the time, did of course not specify race. It was only until, I believe, 1991 that ethnic origin was actually specified in the national census in Britain. So one of the difficulties to get a clear sense of, say, how many black people were in Britain during the 19th century is that there is virtually no way of telling.
Wow. So let's dig a little bit further into that time frame, because you mentioned that this was and is, I guess, a part of a research project. So maybe talk about the excavation, if you will, of these images, and maybe what you were looking for, and you know, what type of thoughts around it, that discovery.
So the underlying mission was really to enter the archive, and I say archive in a kind of generic way. Here we're talking about a very specific archive, but I'll get to that in a moment. But the mission really was very, very simple and straightforward. It was to enter the archive with the one particular objective: to excavate images of black figures which would have not been in the public realm before, and to then curate, exhibit, contextualize, research, disseminate those images in order to create a different and more inclusive history, cultural history of photography in Britain. So, for example, we've spent, and when I say we, I mean Autograph as an organization, we have worked within the realms of black photographic practice for about 30 years. So we were founded in the late 1980s by, at that point, a collective of artists, activists, curators who came from mostly Afro-Caribbean and South Asian backgrounds, so political, marginalized black, if you like. And they came together with the mission to create a platform to nurture, disseminate, publish, exhibit work by black photographers. So as an organization, we've grown over the years, and one of the objectives became also to do this archival research, to look specifically at the history of photography, not only in terms of contemporary practitioners, but to rewrite that history, if you like, and fill gaps. So the overarching project, and Black Chronicles, too, is one, perhaps the first showcase of this project, I should say, is really a three-year archive research program called The Missing Chapter. And this notion of the missing chapter is a leitmotif that we use very often when we speak about the history of photography, namely saying that there are all of these different unexplored, unwritten chapters within a wider cultural history of photography, and the archival research that we do serves the purpose of filling these chapters. Now, in many ways, this is an ongoing process. So Black Chronicles is one chapter. That's also why we use the metaphor of the chronicle, because there are many chronicles and there are many missing chapters, and the research in many ways is never complete. It's what Professor Stuart Hall called an unfinished conversation. So it's an unfinished conversation, a dialogue that we have with the archive, with artists, with historians, with practitioners. So for the past 30 years, a lot of our work as an agency has focused on promoting photographers from different cultural backgrounds whose work addresses questions of cultural identity, race, representation, and human rights. Now, after spending the last 6-7 years doing archival research and promoting and building and establishing an archive that looks at black representation from the 1950s onwards, we felt that the kind of most urgent and most pressing missing chapter really is to expand that history of photography, that history of representation, if you like, all the way back to 1839. So we built a series of strategic partnerships with other national institutions as well as private collections. Now, often when people ask about how we first encountered these photographs and where they've come from. The story that journalists would like to hear and seem to prefer is one of dusty drawers and attics and places, basically, that nobody has accessed before. And then all of a sudden, in a kind of moment of surprise, these images appear. Now, it's not exactly how this exhibition came into fruition. One of the strategic partnerships we built was with the Houghton Archive. And the Houghton Archive is a division of Getty Images. Now, they have a giant maze of a warehouse in West London. And this giant maze of a warehouse holds 80 million photographic records, if not more. Now, out of those 80 million photographic records, only a very small percentage is digitized. And through this conversation that we established with colleagues at the Houghton, they generously opened their doors to us and allowed us access to their archival vaults, if you like. So members of Autograph, including myself and a team of expert researchers at the Houghton, came together to begin looking at one particular collection that forms part of these 80 million records. And that particular collection is called the DEM London Stereoscopic Company. Now, the London Stereoscopic Company was the most commercially successful photographic studio that operated in the 1850s, 1860s, all the way to the early decades of the 20th century. And the Houghton Archive held a collection of 15,000 and still hold a collection of 15,000 glass plate negatives and some surviving albums. Now, most of these glass plate negatives have not been accessed, nor catalogued, nor ever digitized. They were literally a classic archival story, sitting on shelves wrapped in brown tissue paper and string. And we started looking through these negatives with the hope that amongst these 15,000 images, glass plates, we would find photographs that relate to our mission, to find the earliest images of black figures, and we did. So in many ways, it was a project driven by curiosity and the belief that knowing that black people were in England at that time, at some point, they would have been photographed, and most likely they would have walked through the doors of the London Stereoscopic Company at some point.
Now, do you know anything, not anything, but how much do you know about the context around which these subjects were photographed? Because you talk about commercial photography, mm-hmm. and most of these images, people came to the studio and sat for these images, sat for these photographs. So can you talk more about the context of maybe the social norms around why they would have been even photographed to begin with?
Sure. Well, the easy answer in some ways is that most of these photographs were taken for the purpose of producing a promotional photograph called a carte de visite. So carte de visite is really, the translation is calling cards. So they were visual business cards, if you like. So the main purpose that they served were promotion. They were extremely popular during that period, in Europe as well as in America. And photographic studios would make most of their income through the production and promotion of carte de visites and later cabinet cards, and prior to that, stereo cards. So if you were, say, a performer such as Peter Jackson, who is featured very prominently in Black Chronicles 2, he's photographed at the London Stereoscopic Company in a three-piece suit with a top hat, a very, very striking image, which, by the way, was peeled off the exterior facade of our gallery back in London virtually overnight every single time. He's such a striking dandy of a figure. So when we would come back to the gallery in the morning, his poster basically would disappear.
You mentioned Peter Jackson as one a personality and as also an image in this collection. Can you give some more examples? I know there the African Choir is heavily featured in this exhibition. Can you talk about maybe the African Choir as well as maybe some of the other more interesting figures who were captured for this exhibition?
Yes, captured is an interesting word in that.
Sorry.
No, it's good in that context. So the African Choir really in many ways represents the highlight of the exhibition. That is partly due to the volume of images that we were able to unearth, and also, of course, due to the sheer quality of those works. Just a little bit of background and context on the African choir. Now, to the best of my knowledge, this particular body of work constitutes the most comprehensive body of photographs of the black subject taken in Victorian Britain. There are approximately 40-something images in the Halton Archive, and most of them are of absolutely astonishing quality, the original glass plates. They feature 16 members of the African choir. Now, the African choir was a group of performers who left South Africa in 1891 to tour Britain and later in a different formation, also America. They were part of a group of young, educated, modern, if you like, South Africans who were graduates mostly from Lovedale College, which was the mission, the primary missionary educational institution on the Cape Coast at the time. And they were put together as a troupe to raise funds to build a technical college. That was their promotional tour slogan, if you like. There is some kind of ambiguity in the background in terms of how much of that was true. The choir members say different things in response. But the official line is that they were put together as a group to raise funds to build a technical college, a black technical college back home. And they included some very, very prominent figures. So amongst them, for example, was a young woman called Charlotte Makomo Monye. And Charlotte was a very, very outspoken and eloquent young woman who went on after the tour in Britain to become the first African, South African female to graduate from Wilberforce University in the US. And no other than W.E.B. Du Bois wrote a small preface on her in one of the pamphlets that was published at the time. So she had a great mentor and tutor. And she then went back home to South Africa and founded various women's rights advocacy organizations and did some great work in terms of the movements around emancipation in South Africa. So really, really interesting as a figure, and especially also in the context, of course, of Spelman College here. And there are other members of the choir, such as Paul Siniwe, who also was an outspoken national activist, if you like. And the choir as a troupe performed for the nobility and dignitaries in the UK, including Queen Victoria. So they were extremely popular, but at the same time, they were also criticized in the early stages of their tour, amongst other things, for the fact that they weren't African enough in terms of their visual sartorial choices. So one decision that was made, again, something that's slightly ambivalent in the background here, and there are ambiguous statements in terms of the research around that, was that they were asked by their managers to perform in what one could describe as a much more exotified African attire. So in many ways, if you look at the reviews of the time, reviewers felt that the image that they portrayed was not African enough, it wasn't different enough, it wasn't exotic enough. And they then adopted a kind of dual sartorial garb as part of their performance, which meant that they performed one half in Victorian attire and the other half in what one may describe as an African costume. However, that costume, of course, was put together in Britain. So there's absolutely nothing authentic or African about it, but it played to the kind of sensibilities and ideas and fantasies of Africa that was heavily imprinted in a Victorian mindset of the time. So lots and lots to kind of deconstruct when you look at these portraits.
Given your work, both with this particular exhibition, but I guess in a larger context with Autograph APB, what has been the response to this renewed perspective of Africans in Britain?
The first thing to say is that the exhibition in many ways was a revelation to us as curators, as well as to the audience. I mean, we did not expect to find that kind of a repertoire and body of images. It was a very speculative and hopeful mission in the early days, but we didn't know whether we would find anything or whether we would find a body of work such as the African Choir that would have the potential to radically shift the way we view the black subject in Victorian Britain. Luckily, it worked out, but it was not something that we knew when we embarked on this mission in the first place. Now, when the exhibition opened at Rivington Place at Autograph, our gallery home base in London, about a year ago in September 2014, we had a huge amount of press right from the start. It was probably the most successful exhibition project that we have presented over the last 28 years or so, in terms of audience numbers, in terms of responses, and in terms of the kind of critical acclaim the exhibition received in the press, both in the UK but also in the US. And part of that was due to the fact that it gives audiences, and especially black migrant audiences in that moment, a kind of sense of existence within history. So what it does, it literally puts people in the frame. So if we think of Victorian portraiture now, and especially Victorian photographic portraiture, there is a range of images that exist that show visual photographic evidence that black people existed. And photography can do that beautifully. Of course, there is writing and historical accounts of black figures in Britain during that period, but nothing can do that in the same way than showing a photograph. So when we first opened the exhibition, there would be wonderful instances where we would find young black mothers educating their children in the gallery. Because for the first time, there is a moment where one can look at a grand Victorian portrait and see yourself in the frame. And it was a tool, a resource that simply didn't exist before. And that's really the power at the heart of this exhibition, that it allows to shift the image of self and the perception around people's presences. And it's that very notion of visual evidence that photography does so beautifully as a political tool to talk about representation and race.
So bringing that back to the American audience and maybe circling back to that initial question that I asked you about sort of the differences in what was happening in the United States during this time as compared to what was happening mm-hmm. in Britain, what do you hope that American audiences get from seeing this exhibition?
I mean, a couple of things. I think there's a synergy across what's been done in African-American photographic history and what we are doing in Britain at the moment. So, for instance, you have the wonderful luxury of having scholars such as the great Deborah Willis here, who is really the godmother of black photographic history, who has already spent decades doing that kind of work. You've got W.E.B. Du Bois's 1900 Paris albums, which we also showed in Britain at some point. So there's an incredible counter-archive of 365 photographs of African Americans, and a lot of those portraits were taken in Georgia that were exhibited in Europe at the turn of the century. So the images in Black Chronicles, in many ways, for me, stand in direct dialogue with those other historical archives that used photography as a political tool to change perceptions. In terms of American audiences' response to Black Chronicles, in the end, in my opinion, it comes down to this gesture around the archive and around hidden, for lack of a better word, treasures within the archive, and this sense of curiosity and knowledge that can be generated through progressive curatorial research. And that doesn't matter whether that happens in the UK, in London, in a place like the Halton Archive, or whether it is here. It's about continuously searching and mining the archive to excavate images that can change the way we look at black people in history, the way we look at representation and race, and to radically shift that into a different space. And I'd like to think that the exhibition inspires people to continue to look and critically assess what these images do as agents of communication, whether here or there. The exhibition is dedicated to Professor Stuart Hall, and when you visit the show, you will see that the images are not presented without a kind of contextual framework, and that contextual framework is provided by the words and the voice of the late Professor Stuart Hall, who was our chairman for nearly 20 years and who passed away 2 years ago, sadly. And the reason why Stuart Hall's words are so important in that context is because they subtly evoke and point to the very reason why these people were here, why they found themselves in Britain. So he talks very poignantly about the relationship between the expansion of the British Empire and the colonial imperial history of Britain. So one of the key citations that we use in the exhibition is a quote by Stuart where he says, "They are here because you were there." So of course, the very presence, the collective presence of the different figures within this exhibition is a result of Britain's colonial empire. And in many ways, this whole notion around memory and forgetting and the archive and presence comes back to who writes history and who looks after the kind of who are the gatekeepers of these archives. And in each of those photographs, you will find a kind of intertwined narrative that includes the history of slavery, the history of the empire, the Industrial Revolution, and the personal and political story that comes together in portraits like the one of Prince Alemayehu, who was a refugee prince from what is now Ethiopia. But he ended up in Britain in 1868 because the British, of course, were in Ethiopia, in Africa at the time. Same for someone like Sarah Bonetta Forbes, a very, very wonderful portrait in the exhibition that features that features prominently. And again, she, as a young woman, was brought to England as a gift to Queen Victoria. She was enslaved by fellow Africans and then brought over here on a ship called the Bonetta. The captain of the ship was Forbes, so her name became Bonetta Forbes. And she was given to this captain as a gift to Queen Victoria. Yet her image is a very different story to that of other black people within the framework of Black Chronicles, if you like.
Renee Masai, curator and head of archive for Autograph APB in London, and the curator for Black Chronicles 2, which is on display here at the Spelman College Museum of Fine Art. Renee, thank you for your time.
Thank you so much.